Hey, Rapids fans, you're listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Saturday, July 15th, 2023. Happy match day. I've got some pre-match listening for you here. Very special treat. This past Thursday, I got to sit down for 45 minutes with Drew Moore to talk about him and his career and his time at the club and what he's doing now on the media and on the academy coaching side. It was well-timed given his gallery of induction that the club did this past Saturday, a week later than I wanted it to be, but I'm more glad that it happened and that Drew was his usual wonderful interviewee self than I am mad that it was a week late. So without further ado, here's that interview. I promise you, unlike the second half against Portland on Wednesday, this will not be a total waste of time. Let's start with, how'd you like getting your flowers on Saturday?
I didn't get any flowers.
You didn't get any? That's the way the kids are saying it on the internet.
Well,
nobody gets men flowers.
That's true, yeah. I think I've just seen that recently. My I'm almost to the point where my kids are telling me what kids are saying, you know? So, aging myself a little bit there. But my wife got some actual flowers.
Okay, yeah. I feel like even though you didn't play, it was a fitting performance and a fitting result against the right opponent. That I know the team was trying to win the game, not do you justice, but they also did you justice.
Yeah, it was just a perfect night. I feel like obviously the club went all out. I feel like for celebrating me, you know, which mm-hmm. I don't like, even though I do this media stuff and I'm willing to speak in front of people. I don't like the attention game, actually. Like, it can be overwhelming, you know, but, you know, the club made me and my family feel extremely special, and which it was a special day. It's still surreal to see my name up there, but the team to play like they did, again, like, you know, it was all done during halftime, so, you know, they probably weren't even super aware of everything that was going on, but the fireworks afterwards, the weather ended up being pretty much perfect, you know. So the crowd was unbelievable. Like it really was. So it was a pretty special night. Something we'll remember forever.
Mm-hmm. You don't like being the attention on you. You are still a center back in your personality as opposed to a forward.
Exactly.
Are you at peace with retirement?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. I still am. It's been what? 7 months since, I guess, 6.5 months since January 1st. And really about 9 months since I announced retirement. And I'll say this, I'll be honest about it. I don't miss really playing yet. I do miss being a soccer player because of how amazing it is to be a professional athlete. You know, there's a lot of perks that come along with that.
Yeah.
You know, like you only work for so long during the day. And it's just... you just miss that part of it, you know? And while I'm still treated amazing around here with such respect and even out in the public at times, thinking of being competitive on Saturday nights and being competitive in training is still draining for me because I think towards the end of my career, physically, your body starts to break down at 36, 37, 38, you know, when you've done it for so long. And then that will start to wear on your psyche and your mentality, you know? And I think one thing I always had was like a competitive edge. But thinking of going out there and competing for a spot every day and competing against another team for games, I don't yet miss that part.
What, either whether it's food or time with the family, or is there, or just not being sore as hell on Sunday morning, what part of that are you now enjoying that you don't have to deal with?
Yeah, I think I do. Although I enjoy traveling because the trips aren't long, right? They're 48 hours tops these days, especially with charter flights, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't miss being on a strict-ish regimen food-wise. Mm-hmm. Not that I was ever the model of professional athlete diet-wise. But, you know, I can enjoy a guiltless beer on a Friday night or two. And not traveling does give me more time with my family on the weekends, which has been nice. And I think I probably will travel at times. I think the club, if I said I want to go on trips, they would be okay with it, you know. But there is something about spending Saturday and Sunday, the majority of Saturday and Sunday, with with my kids, and my wife. So I've enjoyed that side of it. Yeah.
What's the cheat meal you're getting to have a little bit more of these days?
Anything fast food, and it's guiltless now.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I still think, well, what is this going to do with my body? It hasn't affected me too much yet. I do have pretty good genes there.
Yeah.
And I'm still not too old. You know, I'm not quite 40. I'm very close to it. But, like, honestly, my boys, you know, I'll probably get them fast food twice a week, and I'm not skipping out on those fast food meals, whether it's Taco Bell. I'm a Big Mac guy, so McDonald's.
Whataburger, was that in your part of Texas?
Oh, of course, yeah. We don't have them here, right? At least not that I know of.
No.
They are starting to franchise out a little bit more. But yeah, I'm still a... Listen, fast food was my guilty pleasure while I was playing, but I do it more often now, and it's guiltless.
Mm-hmm. Home opener, 2020. Your first game back in Burgundy, 2-1 win. You score the winner at the end, and your wife Shelby, being the agent of chaos that she is, posts a text thread where you get locked out after the game. Drew, where were your keys?
I have to think about that. I just don't think I had a house key yet for some reason, which is interesting because we had been in our house for a month and a half at that point.
Well, you were gone for probably a month for preseason.
True, yeah.
And then on the road at DC United for that first. So that might have been your first week, week back in the house.
That's a good point. I wish I could remember. Obviously, the moment, the emotions that I was going through, you know, I could have misplaced my keys. But I think I just didn't have a house key yet. And I think I forgot to tell her to leave the back door unlocked because we hadn't set up our garage keypad yet either.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was legitimately locked out. And if she had fallen asleep, I wasn't waking her up because she's one of those that can, you know, sleep deeply. Mm-hmm. The dog's barks might have woken her up, but I could have been in some trouble there.
Okay, yeah. Drew, that kind of, it almost worked. It a little bit ruins the hypocritical story of you losing your keys. It's like the... watching The Last Dance and finding out the flu game was actually the food poisoning game, but okay. There's a part of me that was looking at decision day last year at Austin. You remember that game was chaos. I don't remember what, it was late, whatever minute Diego scored that 1-1. And there's a part of me that's like, the team's not going to make the playoffs. Does it really matter? I want 10 more minutes of Drew Moore. And the more I think about it, and I don't know if this was your decision or Robin's decision, I think it was still incredibly fitting that your final game was here in front of Dallas, clean sheet, 1-0 win.
I think Robin definitely wanted me to choose when my last game would have been. He the respect level that he has for all players, but certainly a situation like that was extremely high. But I think a lot of people don't realize I played the last 4 or so months of that season really nagging, really bad plantar fasciitis. I couldn't get through training sessions. Maybe once a week, like the first training session of the week, I could get through. But the rest of the week, I couldn't hardly walk. And so even in the Dallas game here, I wanted that to be my last game because it was at home. My family was going to be here. It was against Dallas. I struggled to get through that 10 minutes. And it took everything in me not to show people that I was struggling. I remember warmups of the game in Austin, which unless I, you know, absolutely had to be thrown on, which I can't even think of the situation that I would have been. I
4 red cards to all the defenders.
Yeah, exactly. But even then, I don't know. I don't think I was going to be used. And I remember warmups of that game. Like, again, it felt like I had glass in my shoes. Like the plantar fasciitis was so bad. And so, I think I went to that game like some of the away trips last year, just to be there, just to, you know, be a veteran and you know, there for my leadership, because there were some games where I went on away trips where I wasn't even in the squad that I was there for. But Dallas was very clearly going to be my last game.
Speaking of leadership, there was a possibility again in 2020 with some COVID cases where you might have been interim assistant coach. Tell me about all that.
So, yeah, we were, you know, some of the staff and players were starting to test positive. And Robin called me one night, kind of randomly. Forgot exactly how the conversation went, but he said, what would you think of, helping coach for a little bit? And I immediately thought, a couple coaches, it tested positive. And I was like, yeah, whatever you need. Like, and then it was very clear to me, like, oh, he's called me to tell me he has tested positive, you know? And so, of course, like, if he's testing positive, all the coaches share a meeting room in there. And so, and I was like, of course, like whatever you need, And there was, of course, the Chris Cartledge, our academy director, because the twos didn't exist at that point, but we had some, like the older U19 coach, Eric Boucher, a couple other coaches would actually be out on the field at training and stuff. But I think that, Robin looked to me because I'm there with the players every day and know what's going on and stuff, to kind of run those sessions. And I was still training and everything. And then, the plan was if we were going to go to Portland to play that game that, with the guidance of some of the, coaches from the lower teams, I was going to kind of represent as the head coach, but of course we ended up losing more and more players to positive tests.
And then so, games got, and that's when games start getting postponed and then the points per game MLS.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Was it, maybe this is a better question for the MLS bylaws, or MLS would have had to, maybe there would have been a Drew Moore rule. Was there a possibility then that interim head coach Drew Moore subs on Drew Moore?
I think so. I think because, again, we were going to be low on numbers, right? I don't think we were going to be able to take even like a full squad.
Mm-hmm.
And so my gear, at least, at the very least, would have been there, and because there would have been other, coaches on the bench and stuff. There was a chance if I was needed that maybe it never really got that far.
Yeah.
Of course. But I was having, a couple Zoom chats with the coaches, those couple evenings to talk about how training went, what training would be the next day. But those decisions never had to be made.
Yes, thankfully. There's a fantastically weird 30 for 30 in here somewhere in the Rapids multiverse. And thankfully,
the 30 for 30 that never happened.
Yeah. 2015 MLS All-Star Game. What do you remember about that night?
Oh, the first thing that comes to my mind of the 2015 All-Star Game was just how proud I was of the club and the state, the atmosphere, the support, all the side stuff that comes along, which I didn't realize at the time because I had never been an All-Star. You go out in the community, you have some appearances, Kaká was here, Davidea was here, Clint Dempsey was here, Josie Altidore was here. It was pretty amazing. And I remember as the national anthem finished, my family was here. It was a packed house and a B-2 bomber goes flying over. I got chills. I got goosebumps, and it was incredible to play my only All-Star game here. I got to play the second half and a lot of my play, I was matched up against Harry Kane, which was amazing. Just being so proud to represent the club and the spectacle that it was so special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you remember Ethan Finley absolutely skinning whoever that fullback was?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty entertaining game. Mm-hmm. Like, both teams wanted to win that. They were obviously in their preseason. That Kane scored a banger, and then I think Kaká and Villa both scored. And it was a pretty competitive. I remember I was dead tired about 5 minutes into the second half because just the pace that the game was played. Obviously, it was middle of the summer, so it was hot, but it was awesome.
Yeah. Later in 2015, you leave for Toronto in free agency. What are you and – it was you and a lot of other big veterans that were big pieces moving around.
Yeah.
And the first time in free agency, how crazy was that?
Yeah, it was interesting because it was the first time free agency was available. And I didn't want to leave the Rapids, I could have pictured myself being here for the rest of my career. Same, I could have pictured myself being in Dallas before I was traded. Yeah, I just when I go to a club, I commit to that club, And they declined my option, which was fine. I thought that that they might do, that the Rapids might do that. I was just like, you know what? Like, this is an opportunity, being a free agent for the first time towards the end of my career, to explore what's out there. And Toronto was starting to put together a squad that might compete for MLS Cups the next couple of years, you know? And it was a big market, and there was a little bit of that allure, you know? It was a different country. My wife being pregnant, we thought, why don't we go on this adventure, you know? And so it was so hard to leave Colorado. And I think, you know, I've said in many interviews, the day we left was the day that we started dreaming and talking about coming back, you know? And so it was an adventure in Toronto, and it was a special place, and it was a very good team when we were there. But it was a much harder decision, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of people like to say, not a lot of people, but, you know, going through social media, sometimes I see, oh, you know, he just left for more money. I didn't leave for more money. Mm-hmm. I wasn't on any more money there than I would have been on here. You know, it was just a chance to go and try something different in my career. I'm happy I did it, but I was even more happy to be able to come back.
Mm-hmm. We see now a lot of MLS teams, you know, I'm sure there was a lot of whining and dining to convince Messi to come to MLS, and he's going to get a lot of red carpets rolled out for him as well. How interesting was it, just given where, you know, oh, there's the reallocation draft and all that stuff, to, you know, show up in Toronto and be like, hey, let's take you to a Raptors game, and MLS players are being treated with that level of respect?
Yeah, and I think that was very interesting, because it was a bit like college recruitment. That's what it reminded me of, you know. And the Philadelphia Union were super interested, right? And they did a lot of things. They knew my wife was from Jersey, right? Very close to Philadelphia, and so they, you know, they pulled on her heartstrings a little bit. You know, it was super interesting. It was a bit of a recruitment type, and yeah, like I can only imagine what it's like now.
Yeah,
you know, especially when some of these superstars are announcing their interest in MLS and everything. So it was cool, but also, you know, I'm somebody, I don't really like the attention, you know, like I'm not gonna turn it down or anything, but, you know, that's something that your family comes, the decision, you know, family comes in the decision making, you know, where you could be 3, 4, 5 years from there comes in the decision making. But it was an interesting process.
Yeah. Did Dallas give you a call?
No.
All right.
Philadelphia and Toronto were it's interesting. Philadelphia and Toronto were the main ones. And I think I was the second one. I think Justin Mapp established first where he was going. I don't remember where he ended up going. He was the first one he was the first ever really free agent.
Yeah.
To announce where he was going. I said Toronto, and it's interesting. Before I signed a contract, all of a sudden my agent gets reached out by, I think, Vancouver, all of a sudden became super interested. Orlando all of a sudden became super interested. But at that point, I had kind of committed to Toronto already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Five caps with the U.S. men's national team, all from 2007 to 2008. And you'd say that about a guy of your level in MLS. You know, you'd think January camp, cupcake, maybe some random 10 minutes in a friendly or something. And you played in a Copa America. You played in a Gold Cup. You had significant minutes in those five moments, those five opportunities. What sticks out from your national team time?
Feeling overwhelmed. Overwhelmed by the pace of play, the names that were there. I was just talking about this with Kenny Cooper when he was here to celebrate my Gallery of Honor induction. I wish, you know, I don't have any regrets about playing or anything, but I wish I felt more comfortable when I was in my time with the U.S. national team. I was playing right back, which was out of position for me, but no problem. Like, national team wants me to play right back. I'm going to play right back. But just probably not ready for that level at the time. Mm-hmm. I think back to, you know, fond memories for sure, and playing in a friendly against Mexico in Houston, Texas was amazing, you know, and assisting Jose Altidore on his first international goal was amazing. But I felt overwhelmed, you know. I felt like I'm not ready for this level, you know. And I, if I could go back and do it again, I would go in with more confidence and not as deer in headlights. But that's just the way it was then, you know. It was like, national team is a big deal, and it was always a big deal to me growing up. But yeah, I wish I had gone in with a little bit more confidence. Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, the club has never done a testimonial for a player. I feel like if they were going to do one, Cello should get one first. In a way, he gets one annually with the Media Cup, where he trots out there, complains about being hurt, and then outplays all of us still on the ball. me as a very average high school player on a very bad high school team, I should point out. Any desire to have a testimonial whatsoever?
Because the club hasn't done it with Balboa or Pablo or Connor Casey, you know, mm-hmm. like if there's going to be a testimonial for me, there needs to be a testimonial for these guys first, you know? And so if the club wants to do a testimonial, I don't think any of us are going to say no to a testimonial, mm-hmm. but because it hasn't been, you know, customary in the past, then,
yeah.
No, not for me. They've given me enough of the spotlight, you know?
Who would be your center back partner if that were to happen?
Man, I feel like I would have to, and this is, I'm answering this very quick, but I feel like I would have to bring Marvell Wynn back.
Mm-hmm.
Just an incredible partnership we had. We were just polar opposite players, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we made that work. And, I feel like he would do it in a heartbeat. That would be awesome to play next to Marvell one more time.
So I had to look up your stats yesterday. There's a lot of them. So 411 regular season games, 24 playoff games, regular season minutes, 33,816, playoff, 21-22, and in your entire career, I guess I don't have Open Cup or Champions League in this because MLS wasn't tracking that, 47 yellow cards, 3 reds. That's 4 yellows for a 34-game season playing 90 minutes. How does a center back in a league with a bunch of DP attackers do that?
Not physical enough. I wish I had more cards because, I do think a lot of my game was positioning and being out ahead of the play and not having to commit fouls because of that. There were many times where I probably should have been more physical. I wish I had at times, and again, I don't regret anything about my career, but there were times where I wish I had a little bit more loss. I had a little bit more bite. I struck a little more fear into the opposition attacking players, you know? It just wasn't my personality. It's not my personality.
Yeah.
It wasn't the first thing I think about when I'm defending. First thing I'm thinking about when I'm defending is organizing. It's being out in front of the play. It's not hit the other player. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I wish I had a little bit of more hit the other player in me. I didn't have to pay as many fines, I guess, because I didn't have as many yellow cards as you would think for the number of games I played in. But just staying out in front of the play, again, keeping the guys around me on their toes is probably why I didn't have as many yellow cards. And because I wasn't as strong as some of the center backs. So, you come together. A lot of times I was losing an upper body battle,
mm-hmm.
And so I won't complain about the few number of cards, but I wish I had more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you remember about your red cards?
Probably just losing my head. I remember one was a second yellow card in a playoff game against Houston, which was pretty much done. We were going out, and Baldomero sent me off because I was mouthing off to his linesman. One was a hard tackle against Tony Beltran in Salt Lake
okay.
when I was playing for Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think we were winning 2-0 in the game. They came back and beat us 4-2. And right after they scored their fourth goal, I went in for a bad tackle. Mm-hmm. Just kind of saw red, literally. Mm-hmm. And psychologically, yeah.
It was 2013 in the regular season with Colorado. I don't know if that jogs your memory, but we can move on if you want.
Yeah, probably. probably something silly.
How you liking doing media stuff?
I like it. Media is something that I've always been interested in. I'm interested in calling games, actually,
mm-hmm.
being color commentary. I did have an interview with Apple TV back in November. Went great, but didn't hear back from them, and they ended up hiring a wonderful crews for those games, but the Rapids allowing me to get some reps and some exposure and do some of their media stuff has been great. I really like it. It's not easy. There's a lot to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You got somebody talking in your ear while you're trying to talk about the game, whether it's live, whether it's taped. There's cameras on you. There's mm-hmm. places you're supposed to look and not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also tough because this is a club I love. And when you have to analyze the team after maybe a tough outing, you have to be fair.
Yeah.
But it's my club too, you know. And so there's also some challenges in, from that aspect. But I do like having a microphone in my hand and sharing my thoughts on what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. As another former player who's gotten into media, how much has Jordan kind of been the veteran coaching you up?
Jordan's been amazing. And I knew she was because, you know, Jordan was here before. She was great here. She was great in Columbus. And to have somebody so experienced and so understanding sitting next to me and kind of holding my hand through it is there's no better way to learn. And so I'm super appreciative of her patience. I mean, I think she thinks I'm pretty good at it. At least she tells me that. But she's helped me out a lot.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about what she's doing trying to bring a pro women's team here?
Yeah, and I gotta be honest, I haven't heard much about that. She and I haven't really spoken about it. Obviously, I'm all in support of the women's game and would love to see a women's team here, but I haven't seen much about it. I haven't spoken with Jordan about it. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be cool though.
Yeah. What else is there? How are you liking doing coaching stuff in the academy?
Amazing. I think when I was a rookie in the league, and even when I was in college, I would go back in the summers and train with FC Dallas, who the Dallas Burn back then, and that see how some of the veterans, the older guys, carry themselves on a daily basis, how they take care of themselves, and then becoming a rookie and actually being able to kind of pick their brains and talk to them and see how they made it in the league for so long was awesome, and I feel like I had that role in my last 4 or 5 years as a player, just being a good example, being somebody who's been there and done that and can share some wisdom. And I try to do that with the academy players as well and the second team players and the first team players still, you know. But the academy players are that's the future of this club, you know, and it's or the future of other clubs, you know, but certainly being able to spend time with them, to share some of my experience, to share how I carry myself, to try to lead them in a path where they can succeed, is a job that I don't take lightly, and it's a job that I embrace because I see a lot of talent and a lot of potential in a lot of those players, and that's a super, you know, 15, 16, 17, it's a super influential age, not just for soccer, but for life.
Yeah.
And to try to be a bit of a mentor for them, if they want it, I embrace that and try to do everything I can, both on and off the field, to provide them with some of the, you know, the things that I was provided with when I was their age to try to help them succeed.
You emphasizing helping the center backs on the field, or is it a little bit of everybody?
A little bit of everybody, but of course, like the defending in me it will never go away, you know, and that will always be. I mean, you should see me play number 9.
Yeah.
Actually, you shouldn't see me play number 9. But you learn, you know, you learn a lot over the course of a long career, and you know, watch a lot of, you know, watch a lot of video, watch a lot of live soccer and stuff, and so I do feel like I can help other positions, but certainly the center backs is just the position that I feel like I can help most naturally. But there's so much more to soccer than just X's and O's and just positions. Yeah. And there's so much more to soccer than just stuff that you see on the field, you know? And so while the center backs are the ones that I will always, you know, kind of gravitate towards, it's important that I'm open for anybody in any position.
Yeah. Where's the biggest area for growth or improvement for the academy right now?
That's a good question. I don't know that I could pinpoint one area necessarily. I think it's important that the Rapids do what they can to develop talent, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is so much money being spent on players in this league, both coming into the league and going out of the league. And you look at somebody like a Cole Bassett and a Sam Vines, and those are players that are huge assets to this club, right? And the academies is kind of your foundation for the talent that you're going to develop, obviously. And so you know, I don't want to say that all of our resources need to go into development and talent, because you can still go out and buy big time players and come in and win championships and win tournaments and put people in the stands, you know, and improve your team. But as somebody that is a development coach and that spends a lot of time in the academy, again, I spend every day thinking, how can I make this player a little bit better? How can I make this group of players a little bit better? How can I make the U17s a little bit better, the U15s a little bit better? You know, and I think both on and off the field, we just need to continue to make sure we're doing everything we can to provide these guys the foundation and the tools to succeed. And that's a very general statement. I'm still kind of new at it. But I realize being on this side of it, how important it is.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of young players, you know, I saw you back on Monday. You know, you were kicking the ball around after training and everything. What have you liked from Moise Bombito?
Oh, man. The list of what I don't like about him is a lot shorter. I like that he has come in and he is himself. He's not shy. He doesn't shy away from the spotlight. He plays the position that they tell him to play, whether that's center back, whether that's outside back.
Whether it's midfield for John Herdman in the Gold Cup.
Yeah, exactly. And he plays it to the best of his ability. I think Moise still has, as mature as he's been and as good as he's been and effective, he still has a lot of growing up to do, like any young kid coming into this league. And that just takes time and that just takes experience. But I don't want to pump him up too much because, I still know that there's a lot of growing to do, but I'm super excited about his prospects because he's got a level head. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He's motivated, but he's confident. He's got an edge to him. And he believes that he belongs, and he does.
Yeah.
And just excited to see where his path takes him.
Moise, if you're listening to this podcast, stop and get back on the treadmill. I want to go back to your stats real quick because they brought 28 goals. Do you have a favorite goal?
It's hard to beat that Orlando goal.
Mm-hmm.
My last ever goal.
Yeah.
There was a goal in like 2010. I think it was my first goal maybe for the Rapids. We were home to Columbus. We were down a man. About 85th minute, I scored on a free kick, a header. I had some family in the crowd, and it was a big goal. You know, you're down a man. Like we were really only like living off of set pieces at that point. Even back in 2010, we were getting set pieces. And it was just a big goal. You know, we ended up winning the game 1-0. That was a pretty big goal. Those were probably my two most memorable. I did score against Dallas here a couple seasons after they traded me, so it's always nice to get one on
yeah.
the former team. You know, I scored against Colorado once when I was with Dallas, but I didn't have any history with Colorado yet. But those are my favorites. I never scored a playoff goal. I never really scored like a big like season changing goal, you know. Mm-hmm. But 28 goals, like I'll take it. I feel like I should have had 28 more, but I won't complain.
Yeah, you mentioned scoring goals. This is a fun question I hear a lot in hockey about the difference between defensemen and forwards. And the cliche in there is that forwards want to win and defensemen don't want to lose. Do you hate losing more than you like winning?
I think so. Yeah, I hated losing. I got to the point in my career where I wouldn't let me like change my life at home, or you know, I could still go home and go to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And I think just you get that with time, right? But early in my career, man, like before I mellowed out, I hated to lose. Winning's amazing. Winning just, you know, it brings everybody together. Like you just feel good leaving the stadium. You feel good in the locker room. You know, that beer tastes a little bit better. But yeah, it carries over into training. Like, if it's a small-sided game, I hate to lose a small-sided game, especially against your teammates, your brothers, you know? So, yeah, I hated to lose more than I liked to win.
Okay. Do you have a favorite MLS referee?
Yeah, there's a couple. I'm trying to think of my early, early days. I mean, I liked Kevin Stott.
Okay.
I thought he had a great attitude, a good demeanor. I like Robert Sabiga. Where's Robert Sabiga?
I think he's up at pro now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
he is probably my favorite modern referee, yeah. Modern day-ish. You know, stopped ref until what? Last season, two seasons ago.
I think.
I like Joe Dickerson. I loved Abby Okalaja way back in the day. I don't even know. Yeah. He also ref games of mine in college. So this was a long time ago. Alex Pruce. I liked Alex Pruce. He was Russian, I believe. There's another. I actually like Alan Kelly.
Okay.
But I'll say this about referees. My favorite referees are the ones I can almost put your calls to the side, whether you're consistent, whether you're making good calls or bad calls for somebody that lets you get stuck into it.
Yeah.
That are okay with that, that understand that you're going to do that. And I also have a lot more respect of the referees for the refs the later I got in my career, because I mellowed out, because I understood they're human, because we all make mistakes, because that is a hard fucking job.
Yes.
Being a referee. There's no way I would ever volunteer to be a referee at a 7-year-old kid's game, much less a bunch of grown men that, like I used to do, tell you what they think of.
Yes.
And so I think respect needs to come both ways when it comes to referees. Yes, I named a couple of my favorite referees, and I think those are my favorite ones because I could get stuck into them. They could understand, and then maybe they'll give it back to me a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think there is something about being a referee that you do need to put up with some shenanigans at times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, similarly, I'm going to let you give off a whole list as well. Favorite teammates.
Oh. Well, you're going to make me feel bad for the guys that I live out, because I'm going to leave a lot out. Kenny Cooper is my one of my top teammates ever.
Mm-hmm.
I've known him since we were 13, 14. Nick Haglund at FC Cincinnati, the center back. Mm-hmm. He and I spent time together. At Toronto FC, Glenn Irwin, Stephen Betashore, Justin Morrow at Toronto FC, Wells Thompson.
Wells, yeah.
Matt Pickens, Bobby Ryan, who obviously passed away, Oscar Pereja, Greg Vanney. I'll throw Pablo in there.
Okay.
Pablo.
But we'll give you the entire 2010 team. How about that?
The entire 2010 team, okay. Fair.
Anybody Jack from Price. Indiana?
When I was at Indiana?
Yeah.
Danny O'Rourke was my best buddy when I was at Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Ned Grabavoy. We were in the same house together for a year. Brian Plotkin, who got drafted in 06, played in the league a couple years. He and I were tied in at the end.
As well. Mm-hmm.
Jacob Peterson.
The answer.
Played here for a bit, played at Kansas City for a bit. He and I were teammates at Indiana. But again, I've left a lot of people off that list.
Yeah. Okay.
When you play for 18 years, you have a lot of teammates.
Yeah. You know? I can't remember. I remember Rabbi, my co-host, interviewed somebody, and they mentioned this randomly, and I can't remember if it was you or somebody else. Did you play in a youth game where your team won like 8-1 and you scored all the goals, including an own goal?
Yeah. Yes. So it was my first ever game when I was 5 years old. I was late to the game. I might have been coming from something else. My dad had me late to the game. We got to the field, and he's just driving through the parking lot to drop me off. And there's no parking spots up close. So he's just like, there's your team, like in uniform, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, go, I'll park, come. So I'm running out. And the coach has them huddled up. They're sitting down.
Yeah.
A bunch of 5-year-olds sit down.
Yeah.
Coach. And I sit there and I'm going to look around. We've had like maybe 2 training sessions. You know? And I didn't know everybody. I had like a couple buddies on the team. And the coach stops and he looks at me. He's like, hey, I think that's your team over there. And like 3 fields over, uh-huh. We just happened to have the same uniforms, right? Because it was like YMCA soccer or something.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, I run over to my game. I get there just before it starts. we win 10-1, and I scored all 11 goals. And that's a true story.
Yeah. Do you remember anything about the own goal?
No, I don't. I don't, like, my dad had to tell me.
Okay.
I think it was just like they had a break. They, like, I was running back to defend it or whatever. The ball was about to go in, and I kicked it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Other, again, possibly hypocritical story. Were you at the first ever Dallas Burn game?
Yes.
What do you remember about that day?
I remember it was at the Cotton Bowl. It finished 0-0. They went into the dribble up shootouts, and I was like, what is this? I remember there was a player, Washington Rodriguez, who was Dallas's most exciting player at the time. He hit the crossbar on a shot. I just remember thinking, this is awesome. Like we have a team of our own. We have a league of our own. Jason Christ stood out. He ended up scoring the first home goal. No, the first franchise goal, because they played at home the next weekend. And then the weekend after that, they played here for, I believe, the Rapids home opener.
Yeah.
But just thinking how cool it was that we had our own team to support and own league to support. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who did the Burn play that day?
They played the San Jose Clash, who had played the week before.
Yes.
And their home opener, Eric Winalda, scored the first ever goal. So I guess the Burn were – maybe that was the only game that weekend. I don't remember. But the Burn didn't play that weekend. Yeah. So it was the Clash's second game, but it was the Burn's first ever game.
Okay. I think – were there an odd number of teams in the first year?
There might have been, like 9 teams or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 2010, MLS Cup. What stands out from that whole journey, not just specifically that really bitter cold day in Toronto?
Yeah, just – we weren't the most talented team. We weren't playing teams off the park, but we had a group that just believed in what we were, believed in how Gary Smith wanted us to play, believed that Connor Casey and Omar Cummings were going to score goals, believed that Jeff Lorenowitz and Pablo Mascherini were going to boss the midfield, and believed that myself, Marvell Wynn, and Matt Pickens were going to lead our back line. And we went on a run towards the end of that year where we went on the road, we beat the Galaxy. We went on the road, we should have beat FC Dallas. We should have beat Salt Lake here at home on decision day. And we just, when we stepped on the field towards the end of that year, we felt like we could win no matter where we were, no matter who we were playing against. And especially in those days of MLS Cup playoffs, that was the team that had the best chance of winning, no matter whether you were on the road, at home. Team that was in the best form going into the playoffs was the team that was going to win. And we probably led the league in fouls committed that year, Connor Casey alone. But we kicked everything that moved, and we were not going to accept anything but winning a championship.
Mm-hmm.
When it got towards the end of that year.
Yeah, how poetically fitting was it for you that it was against Dallas in the final?
I remember just being like super anxious about it. I wasn't happy that I got traded from Dallas. That was my hometown team.
Mm-hmm.
I was leaving my family, my friends, for really the first time ever. I was bitter about it, And I didn't even want them to make the final. Because we had beat San Jose here on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
And they were playing in L.A. against the Galaxy the next
night. You wanted night. David Beckham in the Galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over. Okay.
Yeah, because I was like, I don't want to deal with the media storm, this is your former team, they just traded you away. And I was still bitter about it. Obviously, I loved Colorado. And when Dallas won and they went to the Galaxy and won like 6-3 or something, ridiculous. I was like, all right, I just need to accept this and embrace it and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like, I'm happy it happened now. It's sweet as can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a – I'm not going to ask you which MLS Cup is more important, Drew, because I would say for both of those clubs it was tremendous in their crowning achievement. Yeah. But I will ask, which one of the MLS Cup rings does Shelby think is prettier?
Oh, man. You'd have to ask her that. It's funny because, the MLS Cup is so – it really was for both sides, And, the clubs are completely different. All clubs are different, mm-hmm. But to win it for this club, right, kind of out of the blue, nobody expected us to. Whereas with Toronto, we showed up for games that year and, and one, I feel like, you know. They're both so special. Just such fond memories of both of them, and they bring the group together so much. And you think about those teammates, that staff, forever. And so they were both just incredible.
Drew, I'm glad we could make this work. I know it was maybe a week later than I wanted to, but I'm more
that's
glad.
That's Emilio's problem.
Yeah, I'm more glad that I got 45 minutes exclusively with you than trying to do something rushed at the end of the game and everything on Saturday. So I appreciate you. I'm glad you're still here, and thank you for just giving me the time. And you've always been respectful with me and the media and everything. Every single time, I don't know that there's one person, fan or otherwise, who doesn't, you know, get the genuine you every single time, and that just makes you an even more wonderful member of the club.
Thanks for the kind words. I really appreciate it, man. And I'm glad I was on time this time.
Yes.
I always am. Tell them, Emilio.
No, I appreciate it, man. Anytime. I'm around. I'm not going anywhere. Because I don't plan on it.
Yeah.